Tune in into this brand new episode in which we will demystify why intentional design is vital to creating events with impact, how the human-centered design is the wave of the future for all businesses, not just events, and much more.
Welcome to Events Demystified Podcast, where we explore and demystify the world of in-person, virtual, hybrid event AV production and technology by sharing insightful tips, tricks, and tactics to make your events a success. This podcast is brought to you by Tree Fan Events, a woman-owned boutique event production agency. And your host is Anka Trifan, a technical event planner and producer with almost two decades of hands-on technical experience in event production.
I have an amazing guest that I am about to introduce to you. His name is Anthony Vaid, CED, Director of North America Event Design Collective, CMBH, Innovative High Stakes Event Design. He's born and raised in Australia. You're going to love his accent. He now lives in Toronto, Canada, which he calls home. He's probably known as an instigator, creator, and change agent for over 20 years. He has helped events stakeholders create meaningful and memorable connections and has done that while working with the largest audiovisual event tech and event production companies in the industry. Designing and executing large-scale conferences, corporate and entertainment events in virtual, hybrid, and live scenarios. He continues to push experience design boundaries in his role as the North American Director with Event Design Collective. He has done a lot of work in this particular field, and I am super excited to talk about him, about what does that even mean, and how can we take this collaborative approach to customer engagement, which can result in thousands of successful events traversing all continents. Check out also the episode's show notes for three fun facts about Anthony, including the part where his study of archaeology gave him a passion for evolutionary psychology, which he applies now in event design regularly. And there's way too many words that I'm just going to stop trying to pronounce right. So might as well just invite Anthony in and have him talk about all the things event design. Welcome to the show, Anthony. What a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me. And I apologize for too many big words.
You're making me sweat.
I do have a tendency to be a little bit verbose. Even saying that I'm verbose is using too big a word as well. I just can't help it.
I'm going to have to go and like Google it, thesaurus. What does it mean?
Oh, wow. There you go. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation. It's a great intro.
Me too. Super excited. Well, here's to kick us off. I like to ask my featured guest this one question to get us on the right path. And here it comes. Although I kind of have an inkling that I know the answer. What is it that you're most passionate about? Sort of like what lights your soul fire when you start talking about it?
Oh, so many things. I am very passionate about, and you're probably going to expect me to say design. And I am passionate about design, but what I'm extra passionate about and why I think design is important is I'm passionate about change and change over time. My personality preference, and we can explore what they are, but my personality preference is very much a difference thinker, a divergent thinker. I like unique. I like the novel. I like to create and make new things. And what goes hand in hand with that is change, because I like to see progression and change happen over time. So that love of change and that love of exploration and adventure drew me into the design world. So number one, I'm passionate about change and understanding where change comes from and what it's about. And number two, I'm passionate about design because design allows us to create change.
I love that. I would say change and growth. Definitely, I'm right there with you. And because the truth is, what's that saying that says the only thing that is for sure is change, right? The only thing that's, I'm pretty sure the saying goes differently, but that's kind of like the gist of it.
Yeah.
Well, before, let me tell you, before I came across the Event Design Collective, perspective, when I thought about what intentional design might be, I had this different definition that was relating more to the human condition. And I don't know if you heard of Daniel Dennett. He is the one that has created this framework of predictive behavior to help explain, and we're going to start with big words again, philosophical basis of our approach when it comes to the understanding of behavior for a thing or a person, and the way it's presented both in the physical design as well as the intentional stance to create what is known intentional design. Now, again, that might sound very confusing to anyone not familiar with intentional design 101. So why don't you give us your definition of what intentional design is as it relates to event design, and why is it so vital to creating events with impact?
Sure. So let's break that question down into its constituent parts, because that's how we like to approach our design and understand what goes behind the elements that make up that whole. So we look at event. Let's define what an event is, because I think that can be confusing for some people. And a lot of the struggles we've had in navigating the digital world and now talking about hybrid, we'll define that one later too. But the struggle we have around that is people not really getting what an event is. And then they think different things when they hear the word event. Some people can think of a big outdoor music festival, or they think of their sales meeting, or they think of a big medical conference. And sure, those things are all events. We like to take a very simple approach to how we define an event. We believe an event is a gathering together of two or more people, and we call them stakeholders because they have something at stake in the event. They choose to be there because it's important for them to be there, more so than it is to not be there. So minimum of two stakeholders in which, through that event, their behaviors are changed. They go into the event experience and come out of it different in some way, shape, or form. So when you start to think about an event in that context, as simple as that, this is an event right now. You and I talking on a podcast is an event because you and I are both stakeholders. There's two of us and the listeners out there. Yes, I'm talking to you listeners. They are also a stakeholder who wants to be transformed or wants to have some change in their world through listening to this. They want to learn about event design, intentional design, and those elements. And hopefully you and I do a good job during this conversation that we can shift that behavior for them so that they become empowered, knowledgeable, and develop some skills to apply some intentional design themselves. So if we understand that events are any gathering of two or more people in which their behaviors are changed, we believe that events create a high amount of value for organizations, individuals, or associations when they are designed with the intention of creating that behavior change. And when they're designed for multiple stakeholders, when we can start to hit as many of the high impact, as we call them, the high impact stakeholders whose behaviors are ready to be changed, need to be changed, and through that behavior change, it will create great value for that organization that owns the event.
I love that. That was the first part of the question, the definition.
That's my definition. And sorry, remind me of the second part.
The second part was, why is it so vital then in creating events with impact?
It comes down to value. Why do we put on an event? At the end of the day, an event that doesn't, in our opinion, and in many, many leaders in the industry's opinion, there's no point putting on an event if it doesn't create some change. If it doesn't drive forward the agenda of the organization, if it doesn't serve the needs of the people attending, the sponsors, the leadership team, whatever the stakeholders are as it relates to that event, if it doesn't create change, then it doesn't provide value to them. And the only way that we can really know if change is going to happen or not and put intention behind creating that change is to really understand what are the true behaviors of all of these stakeholders before they enter the event and what do we want them to be afterward. If we understand their before state and their after the state, then we can really articulate what change is occurring in the middle. Design gives us the ability to explore those questions, to ask the right questions of our teams, to find the right answers, and then direct everybody towards that common goal of creating the most impactful and meaningful change for the event stakeholders through the event.
So then, Anthony, why is it event design so much more important now than before? And can event design be applied to hybrid events into 2022?
So here's the thing. It always was important. We just weren't doing a great job of it. Unofficial mission in the Event Design Collective is to rid the world of mediocre events. And part of the struggle that we've had in the events industry since 2020, everything started locking down, was organizations' viewpoints clients to events. So they saw us as optional, right? Oh, no, well, we're going to shut down for 6 months, cancel the event. It doesn't matter. It's not that important. And this is really hard for us to deal with as an industry because no one likes to be sidelined. No one likes to be told that the event wasn't as important as they think it is. But the issue was really that in the past, we put on the events in the ways that we were directed. Some of us were doing great design, sure, but many people were putting on events based on the history of the event or history of the organization or other events like theirs. They were creating status quo events. And so the leadership teams and organizations didn't really have a good grips of the real change that was occurring, or there wasn't any change occurring. And so they didn't perceive the value in it. So when it came time to cut them, they went, great, let's cut them. And now we're seeking relevancy again. And more importantly, we want to be able to justify if we're going to continue with a digital ecosystem, if we're going to do a hybrid. By the way, let's define hybrid quickly. And I love simplicity in some of these terms. I like to use big words, but let's keep some of them simple. Hybrid is nothing more, nothing less than combining two things that haven't been combined in the past. So I listened to your podcast with Mahogany Jones. Love Mahogany, another great Canadian, but she makes the point that we're going to stop using the word hybrid soon. And that's just brilliant to me, because what's going to end up happening, I believe, is the digital and the in-person experiences are going to become the mainstay. They're always going to be connected. People have said, hey, there's going to be a digital twin to every live event. People have said, you know, we're going to cross between the two. Those in remote will connect with people on site and vice versa. But either way, it's going to be an event, and an event needs a digital ecosystem and it needs an in-person ecosystem, and they need to be healthy ecosystems in order for the participants to interact in that way in an effective way. So to understand what's healthy in an ecosystem, we need to analyze it. We need to get to grips with, okay, if we're going to put on a digital component to this in-person event, who is the audience? What are their behaviors? How do they feel? How do we nurture them into that? And then if we desire to cross between the in-person and the digital, what's going to make the most sense for the individuals that need to do that crossing over? Because it may be the case that a whole chunk of stakeholders are not in a digital space, need a lot of help to get into it, or the opposite may be true, that they already exist in a digital space and we just need to inject the event into that digital space. So we need to really get to grips with, as we look at what hybrid's going to mean in the future, what is the ecosystem that supports these kinds of events that are both digital and in-person? And then what are the behaviors of the human beings so that when they interact with those technologies or the on-site experiences, they feel safe, they feel protected, they feel connected, and they feel the right amount of vulnerability with the right amount of safety and all those elements. And really putting the intention and design behind that is vital. It was vital before with in-person events, and now you add the complexity of multiple ecosystems and different levels of digital dexterity, even harder to navigate. So design gives us the opportunity to unravel the spaghetti in our minds, messiness, and find that linear goal towards where we can head as a team and as an event producer.
I love that. And I tend to agree with the fact that hybrid right now, you know, it's one of those terms that like pivot that we've overused, and it's time to drop it and just accept the fact that that's what the event of the future is going to be. So then we're not just going to call it that, because something that you don't say twice, right? It's like,
yeah, it's almost superfluous to say like a hybrid, because it's not going to be combining two things anymore, because those two things are always going to be together.
Exactly. Well, by now also it's become quite clear that an event that nobody would miss if taken off the table is probably not worth attending, and maybe mediocre, or who knows what reason people don't want to engage with. But any event that is memorable enough, one that people would crave to be partaking, and if it's not there anymore, then that is the event that adds value. That is the event that is missed. Now, in that context, what will define post-pandemic event design? And do you think that the psychological impact of the pandemic will be considered when event designing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I like that point, because one of the things we stress through our design methodology, when we get to the prototyping stage, we always put forward to the design team that the first prototype to explore is not having an event. And we ask the team the questions, if we don't have this event, if we don't put on whatever the event's going to be, what won't change in our world? Because that's really really interesting to analyze and look at, okay, we're trying to drive forward and the agenda of the organization, whatever that may be, and the event can serve a role in achieving that change. But if we don't do it, can we achieve it in other ways outside of an event experience? And people often struggle with that. And that starts immediately to shift people's viewpoint to what an event is and how it serves the organization. We believe that events are markers of change over time when designed effectively. It allows organizations to create moments. And I love that you use words like memorable, but it allows them to create these memorable moments. It allows them to create impactful moments and transformational moments that their team members, their stakeholders look back at later and say, remember that event? Remember that time that we learned that? Remember that time that we had a keynote speaker that inspired us? Remember that workshop that we participated in that changed our opinions on our organization? That was a moment in our journey, and that was an important moment, and I'm ready for the next one. So as we look at designing the events, we ask the question, what won't happen if we don't have an event there? And then that can shift the entire organization's viewpoint to go, okay, what change are we trying to achieve in 5 years' time? And what role does this event on the next horizon, as we like to say, the most immediate viewpoint that we have, what role does this event play in achieving that five-year goal? What incremental change step can we create through this event experience? And that really shifts the thinking of the team. Events are more than just the opportunity to deliver information. It's more than just a chance to get together and network and have a good time. Yeah, we want those things. But if we think of them as markers of change over time, we can get a lot more impact out of those experiences, and we can start to innovate a bit more because we start to see the value that they create by understanding that.
Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifan Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifan Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. Find out how Trifan Events can plan and produce your event become memorable. Go to trifanevents.com. That is definitely something that it's worth keeping in mind. We talk about post-pandemic, but we're right in the middle of it. And we're like, when will that day come? It's something to look forward to. I mean, we have to keep that in mind, and eventually it will happen. So at least it's like, you know, the hope that we have. Well, I did a little bit of stalking on your website, I admit. So on there, you have defined, and I love that, event design to be a methodology to systematically design innovative events. And again, you and your big words, but in simpler terms, simpler words, it allows frustrated event owners to get a grip on their own events, create value, and measure success through behavior change. And ultimately, teams become change makers and confident leaders of event design. And tying that into my prior definition of event design, of how, you know, the primary interest of the design stance is that it justifies reverse engineering. And I've seen you do a little bit of reverse engineering in your process when we were both attending IMAX and you were doing a demo of, I think it was a fundraising gala that we were going to deconstruct and figure out how are we going to design this experience that nobody wants to miss. And it was very interesting to see that reverse engineering, where you can assume that each component is a partial solution to a design problem. We can definitely determine the purpose of that part and then speculate why, you know, that stakeholder takes whatever intentions on whatever form that rather than another form. So with keeping that in mind, how did you come to the conclusion that human-centered design is the wave of the future, especially when we think about events and businesses in general?
The simplest answer to that question is events are for people. We don't put on events for robots. You can't send a robot in your place, although there are really cool tools now that can do the, you know,
I will say
driving
though,
and but
the, on a previous episode we were all advocating for robots for our events.
Yeah, double robot. But wait, that robot was serving a person.
It's true.
That robot was enabling the human experience remotely. So we don't send autonomous robots to act themselves and run organizations. Now, AI is doing amazing stuff. Machine learning is fascinating. Let's not go there. There's been entire conferences designed with machine learning and artificial intelligence, which is really interesting to explore. But as great as machine learning and artificial intelligence are, and how it's going to keep growing at an exponential rate, as we know, this thing inside of our head, in fact, the front portion of our head, for those listening to the podcast, if you get your hand, put it on your forehead, just like when you've been sitting in a committee meeting and somebody says something stupid and you put your hand to your head and you go, oh, and then you shake your head and you go, oh, what was that? But when you hold the front of your forehead there, that's your prefrontal cortex. And this is a fascinating part of the human brain that allows us to differentiate a lot of things in our world. It allows us to recognize good from bad, better from best. It allows us, most importantly, from a design perspective and from an events perspective, it allows us to predict future outcomes from present actions. And so as event professionals and as event designers, the prefrontal cortex is a powerful tool for us to predict, as you did, as you went through the methodology with us.
That be nice if more people used it though?
Yeah, we use it every day and we use it constantly. It's what makes us human. There's not many other animals that activate.
That was more of a joke, Anthony. You're supposed to be laughing.
I know. I wish they did too, but the challenge is we do it, but we don't do it consciously. It's built into whatever process we have. And one of the reasons why Rude, Rule, and Dennis came up with this methodology was to allow people to take some steps to better activate the prefrontal cortex, to really tap into the biology and do that in a visual, physical format so that you get up, you get active, you interact with canvases, you do the sticky notes. Say what you will about sticky notes. Some people are fans, some aren't. But the act of coming together as a team, because there's a lot of power in the communal aspect. We hinted at my passion for evolutionary psychology. Human beings come together for a reason. We do better when we're together. So when we come together with a process to keep us on track, it allows us to really unlock a lot of the power in the mind and get everybody on the same page, as we like to say. Because you and I get together, we start designing together, we'd be like a firestorm. Be great stuff coming out, but there may be other people in our team who struggle to really get out of their own head and to empathize in someone else's mind or to really predict what may come with their prefrontal cortex. So the methodology allows all of those, you know, the firecrackers like us and those who struggle to get on the same page at the same pace through the methodology.
I love that. So now, if we were to go into the psychology of this methodology, would you say there are any things or steps you could do to get better at something that, again, you can grow into?
Yeah. So practicing empathy, I think, is the first step in any form of human-centered design. And it sounds easy, but it's much harder than most people realize to be truly empathic and to shuffle off your own mindset, because our mindsets are deep ingrained in us. We've experienced many years, you know, I've got 40-odd something years of experiences that have led me to think and feel and act the way I do. And everybody else on my team, no matter which event I'm designing with, has had another range of experiences over their time span as well. So all of those experiences that we have leading up to that moment that we're designing together cloud the way that we think about the stakeholder that we're trying to empathize with. Those differences and those experiences in our life are incredibly valuable to the process because they bring a unique perspective. Our way of seeing is good, but we want to really unlock, how does that stakeholder think, feel, see, say, and do? What are their behaviors around this event? And that can take a lot of practice. So we use the empathy map, which was a tool developed by Explain, and Dave Gray explains it a lot in our first book, The Event Design Handbook, where he delves into, it came out of the marketing and advertising world, but it's a tool to allow teams to get together and try and get out of their own head and get into the head of that stakeholder. So we believe the tools are really, really powerful ways of eliciting that kind of thinking in the team. And really, as we look at empathizing as the first step in any form of design thinking, that's kind of key to get what we call a baseline. What's the baseline understanding of what this is? If we don't empathize well, then it's going to be very hard to adjust the behaviors of those stakeholders because we've made incorrect assumptions or we've gotten them wrong. So that's kind of the first step. So practicing empathy is really powerful and it takes a lot of work. It's like a gym membership. I like to say to people, you know, the first time you go to the gym, your muscles hurt for a week. afterwards. Then once you start going regularly, they hurt a little bit less. You start lifting bigger weights and all those kinds of things. Empathy is exactly the same. Empathy needs us to exercise that prefrontal cortex and that muscle to get out of our own headspace and be able to immerse ourselves in the headspace of others. And
I love that analogy. Very good.
And there's a couple of things about empathy to keep in mind as well. Is empathy does not work well when we're stressed, because when the brain is stressed, it releases a hormone called cortisol, which and some adrenaline generally, and that directly inhibits the prefrontal cortex ability to empathize with others. We go into fight or flight mode when we're stressed. And, you know, event planner, top 5 most stressful jobs in the world.
True.
Oh, how are we going to empathize, right? It's a big challenge. So that's key. And then the one that comes naturally, the sort of the second element that I think is key from a psychological standpoint, is articulating the frame. What is the constraint that we're designing within? Because we can empathize and say, hey, I need to, for Tree Fan Events, this needs to be the biggest podcast ever. And it needs to get onto Forbes top 100 podcast list because of this episode. And then we're going to get the Nobel Prize for peace.
That's right.
Yeah. I think you and I both know, with the constraint that we have in our world, the Nobel Peace Prize probably isn't going to come out of this podcast.
But one can only hope.
We could try, right? But the idea of bringing the team together to talk about constraint and talk about limitations and boundaries is really, really important, because often we leave that awkward conversation until later in the process, especially in the planning stages. And that's when the stress kicks in, because we haven't really set the boundaries. And then someone throws something at you from left field, and then you're in planning mode and you go, well, where did that come from? That crazy want that you just threw at us. You don't understand our boundaries. It's like, well, we didn't have the boundary or the constraint conversation. And guess what's the second step in any form of design thinking? Defining the framework that you need to work within. So those two things: empathizing with others, practicing, exercising, getting your gym membership on your prefrontal cortex, and then coming together to really understand what is the true constraint and how does that relate to the true need that the event needs to achieve.
Well, thank you, Anthony, for breaking that down into simple components so people can understand better. What does it look like and what does it entail? Now, if you had one piece of advice that you wanted to provide for event professionals that are seeking to be better positioned for success with events, hybrid, in person, whatever we're going to call the event of the future, what would that be?
Get it down on paper. We're very proud of the smoke and mirrors in our industry. We love to say, I've been in this industry for years. My creative process is brilliant. And then I say to people, well, I love a great creative process. Can you explain it to me? And just like that, crickets. Right? It's total silence. No, I just do it. Or maybe I apply some design thinking in the standard empathy, define, ideate, prototype, test, all that sort of standard cycle. But I think removing some of those smoke and mirrors as an industry and sort of saying, okay, here is how we do it. Here's our method and here's why and how it works. And here's it documented on paper is a very powerful tool for event professionals. One, to get to grips in their own process, but two, to better explain to their bosses that, hey, this isn't me winging it. This isn't me cutting and pasting last year's event. I actually thought about this and here's my thinking. You can look at it or not, boss. Doesn't matter at all, but it's down on paper, it's documented, and then next year we'll revisit it and we'll adapt. And then next year we'll revisit that again. And so we can evolve over time. If it's not written on paper or, you know, on a digital screen, sure. You know, when we say written on paper, who actually writes anything on paper anymore? But documented, when you document the process, it's much more powerful and it's easier for you to get back in and out of that later on as you do more events or as you iterate on that annual repeat event.
Love it. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for your insightful tips and tricks shared with our audience today. Where can our audience that would possibly want to learn more about your process and about your thinking about event design, where can they connect with you?
Well, probably the easiest way would be to just jump straight into our resources. Obviously, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm all over LinkedIn. There's tons of resources that I post on LinkedIn pretty regularly. But we would also love to give the listeners the first 100 pages of the Event Design Handbook, which explains the Event Canvas methodology. And if they sign up for newsletters, they also get a Creative Commons version of the Event Canvas behind me. So they can actually start, one, learning the compartments within the Event Canvas and using the Event Canvas that they get in PDF format they can actually start to map their own events and get it down on paper, like I suggested, or even just like we did in Las Vegas. I warmly encourage people to now go and event canvas this podcast. You just listen to a podcast. I outlined who the stakeholders were at the start. What were our behaviors before, during, and after? And you can start to piece that together. You can find that at www.edco, Event Design Collective, edco.global/download.
And I'll have that in the episode notes so people don't have to like hurt their head trying to, their frontal cortex exploding right now trying to remember the link.
Yeah. That's a great starting point, because that'll give you all the resources to sort of start exploring the event canvas and see if it's for you, and see if you want to explore more about design thinking. And then please drop us both a line and share what your experience with it, or more questions, for sure.
Well, this was a pleasure having you on, Anthony. Thank you so much for taking the time to explain us the process, the methodology, all the big words that we use during today's episode to get a better grasp of what event design is. And it is my great pleasure to do this with you, and I hope to see you again soon. And everyone, do follow Anthony on his social, and especially on LinkedIn, because he always posts a lot of smart, interesting, and informative content that will help you get more closer to your inner empathic self, which we all want, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.
Okay, friends, this is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the very end. Also, for your loyalty to this podcast, wherever you're tuning in from. As always, I welcome your feedback. Keep that coming either on Instagram, Events Demystify Podcast, or via WhatsApp. Find a contact on the website or in the episode notes for all those things. And in the meantime, have a fantastic rest of your day. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Events Demystified podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to review it, rate it, and share it with other event professionals that could benefit from it. Connect with us on social at Events Demystified Podcast. We would love to hear from you and what you're up to. If you'd like to learn more about TreeFan Event Services and find out if we're a good fit in supporting your event, can we help your event be successful with a 20-minute free consultation? Link in the episode's notes. Thanks for tuning in.